the way.
Cutter. And Dale was telling me off the air that actually the Moonglows are backing him up on that one too, and you can hear Harvey at the end there.
Yeah.
So Harvey Fuqua, of course, we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about touring in the 1950s, okay. Because I'm sure you must have gone on some pretty solid tours. Did you go on any of the Alan Freed actual tours?
No, I was seeing Alan Freed. I don't think there were too many Alan Freed tours. It was Dick Clark.
Dick Clark, American, had the cavalcade of
Stars. Yeah. Thing. Now I know that Alan had some in several cities, major cities.
Right.
And I went. I made one or two of those, but the bus touring with the American Bandstand thing, I was out with Roy Hamilton. I can't really just right off bat remember everybody, but
do you ever tour with Bo Diddley?
But yes, sir.
Now was he cooking chicken on the bus? Because there's stories about how he used to cook chicken on the bus.
Well,
is that true?
Bo liked chicken. Let me just say that. I got to spend all about 2 hours with Bo. I did the Blues Festival up in Chicago. It's been, well, as a matter of fact, the year that Wildcat Tamer came out, I went up and did the thing for Shirley Dixon, and Bo and I got down in the basement at Chess, man, and we were scatting everything in the world, man, from My Babe to Love Is Strange.
Wow. That's amazing, man, to be a fly on that wall, I'll tell you. So do you remember, when you think about the touring back in the 1950s, do any stories jump out at you? I always like to ask artists that were touring back then questions, because they think for a second, and usually we get a really good story out of it. Something about getting maybe so you stalled in a town, or maybe you got into some kind of trouble. I mean,
I can give you a good, as many of those as you want. I'm going to give you a good one.
All right.
And then we'll move on. Down in Louisiana, it's not against the law to have a rifle.
Okay.
In your car, right?
Right.
And I had this Roy Buchanan, Dean and Mark, Bill Mack, and the drummer, Melvin Rogers. Okay. We play this paratrooper town on our way up to New York, called Claxton, Georgia. And we did a good show, and some people invited us in for, you know, after it's over with, to drop by and have a drink with them. And you know, it don't make no difference, man. Somebody always going to smart off to you. You know, that's how it would end. I imagine probably still the way it is now if you go in the wrong place.
Some things don't ever change.
Don't ever change. But these paratroopers didn't seem to like us too much, especially me. I mean, he called me a name he shouldn't have called me. And so I just eased out of my shoes. And, boy, I sucker punched him. I hit him, and I knocked him at least two chairs down. And then that's when it all started.
Yeah, I'm sure his friends were there, yeah.
Yeah, and Roy... He acts like nothing's going on. He's got his coat. He's putting it over their head and hitting them with the beer bottle. Yeah, me and Pee Wee, and we did pretty good. Our drummer, he wasn't feeding. I guess he must have got real sick because he left, and we couldn't find him for 3 hours. But after the fight, let me tell you what happened. I pull in this gas station. I'm gassing up. We had an old 57 Ford station wagon. And so when I gas up, I go in to pay the guy. And as I step up on a step to go in, there's one of them paratroopers there with a baseball bat.
Oh.
And he swung. And when he did, I dug back and he come again. And I did. I caught him right in the solar plexus, right in the, and knocked him. I mean, I knocked him slap on the counter.
Oh,
and about
God.
that time, here come another one around the corner with a .22 rifle.
Oh no!
And so Roy just, you know, he looked at him and laughed, and he reached in the back of the truck, the station wagon, and pulled out this .30 rifle
and cocked it,
and that big old shell hit the concrete, man. And you talk about turning and running, them guys hoofed it. They couldn't be found. it sounds like whatever, but it was definitely one of those nights, man.
Wow, touring with Dale Hawkins back in the day. That's what it's all about. Now, you did a song called See You Soon, Baboon.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave down in Houston, Texas, he wrote me and wanted to know, the sound effect of the baboon sounds very similar to the sound effect that Nervous Norvis uses on the song Ape Call. Jimmy Drake was nervous. And he wanted to know if you guys were, like, where did that sound effect come from and if you guys were using the same sound effect.
No, the sound effect that on See You Soon, Baboon was the sound effect that Gene Nobles used on his show out of WLAC.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever his show came on, it would come on, you know, with the tars and yell.
Yeah.
And so they stuck that on the beginning of the song to, you know, maybe to crawl a little, to create a little attention or something.
Yeah, well, it certainly grabs your attention.
It does, and if you'll look on there, you'll see again on it. You'll see Hawkins Lewis, who was somebody. I don't want to, you know, we'll get that another time.
Okay.
And Broadwater. But what happened?
Who was Broadwater?
Right.
Broadwater.
And you know, he let me have the intro to the song.
You're saying Gene Nobles was Broadwater.
Broadwater, right.
Okay, all right. So that's the example of a DJ getting a cut of a record.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's hear it. See You Soon, Baboon, Dale Hawkins.
I was coming from school Friday afternoon. I saw my cow with some raccoon. I stopped her and she shook her pretty head. And this is what my baby says. See you soon, you big baboon. I says, okay, baby, I'm glad I found out soon. Me in the ocean, I'd swim to the bank and crawl home to you. Ain't that lovely, baby? Ain't that lovely?
Ain't that loving you, baby? My guest tonight on the Night Prowl Show, the legendary Dale Hawkins. Ain't that loving you, baby? Now, as the 60s dawned, you started to get further and further away from recording music more into the production side
right.
of things. And so why did you decide you weren't really wanting to play anymore?
Well, it wasn't that so much. It was that what I wanted to do... I the producing end, you know, I love that. I mean, the creative art is food for the spirit. But my wife was pregnant. I wanted to try to get in, and so I could have more of a family life instead of being out, because I was constantly going all the time.
That's understandable.
And so. And the latter 63 and 64, 64 was when I started producing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who were some of the artists you produced?
Let's see. The first that you would probably know, the Uniques, Joe Stanton and the Uniques, John Fred and the Playboys.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right. Let's see. I was running this record label over in Dallas called Abnack. You had the Western Union by the Five Americans.
Oh, that's a good record, man.
Thank you. Let's see. And another one is Do It Again a little bit slower, which was...
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, right?
Yeah, we cut that, yeah. And I did some Bruce Chanel.
You were behind that. Now, this is shocking. You were behind that record?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's a pop record if I've ever heard one.
Well, I'll tell you what I did, man. I took a dang DC-3 fly. I could not find a song for him in Nashville. I took a DC-3 in November into Springfield, Missouri, and I met this guy. His name is Wayne Carson Thompson. And I told him, he was a great writer. And I said, let me just hear what you got. You want you just put, you know, this stuff, and then I'll call you after a while. So he took me up to the station there. And I heard that about the first 20, 30 seconds of it, and I said, that's it. I called him. Left. 2 days later, I was in the studio cutting it. And we did that in Tyler, too.
Oh. And then you, but you came back to, after doing some producing, you did come back into the music business in the 70s, right?
Are you speaking for me? Or
as an artist.
Yeah, well, I tell you what I did. I tried to get away from it. and you know something, man.
You couldn't turn it off, right?
Well, how hard it is, it's kind of hard to be what you're not.
I hear really. That. I hear that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I was fortunate, I guess I was. It's been 15 years ago, and I started putting my studio together and cut some great stuff in here. And I've been able to produce. I go out on the road. I had Flo get me a list of some of the places that I'd played this year. I don't know if it doesn't make really that much difference. But I played like some of the major theaters. Like in Seattle and Atlanta, going out with, believe it or not, what is called the ultimate doo-wop show. Some of the the old Drifters Coasters. Some of them are still around, or their ancestors. You know what I'm saying? And let's see, and. I played, what have I done this year? I played Dallas and Houston. I played the Ponderosa stuff. I hadn't played D.C., man. Golly, it's been a long, long time.
The Ponderosa stop, now that's a show and a half right there.
Yeah.
That really is a show and a half. Now, Ed, do you go over to England to play the... all those big festivals over there? Rhythm Riot, I think, is a huge one over there in England.
The one I played this year was the Hemsby Festival.
Yep.
And before that, they have what they call the Rockers Reunion, and it's right outside of London. And that's where all the bikers from all over Europe come once a year.
Wow.
And you talking about a great show.
I bet.
It was. I mean, I love them to death. I love the Scandinavian people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're all really appreciate.
And the Europeans worship you.
Oh, yeah,
they really do.
Yep.
And I wish you got that kind of credit at home, because that's where you deserve it.
Well, thank you, man.
But, you know, I mean, it's a shame that American artists go over to Europe and they're treated like kings, and they come back here and they're, digging holes and stuff like that. Or mopping floors and stuff like that. It's just not right.
No, it's not. And it's, people deserve the credit for what they do as well as respect for what they do.
I agree.
You know.
Now, you did an album in 1999 called Wildcat Tamer. Did you tame the wildcat?
We sure did. We nailed it to the wall, boy. Nailed it to the wall. And that was another one of those, like, one take. Take it down. We took it down right out there, right into the glass and on the tape.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's what I love about this, is that I'm going to play it, this song from
1999.
And
okay.
It sounds like you could have recorded this in 1957. It's got the dirt. Now, who's playing guitar on this?
It's Kenny Brown.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We talked about that earlier. Yeah. He definitely has a... He definitely has a James Burton type of, little distortion on the guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the feel, I mean, it's hard. See, whenever they whenever I heard the song, the same writer that wrote Number 9, wrote that.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but I didn't know the words to it, so I had to make up the words in the studio.
Oh.
And then, we were taking it down.
And then one take.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, and didn't want to get, I mean, vocally didn't want to get any, you know, because it came down so good I got to hear the song whenever, you know, they wanted to work on it. But if you'd listen to the words and everything, you'll find there's a lot of different words in there that than the original that writer put there. And not to take anything away from the original writer, it was just... Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do, which is improvise.
You just got to do it. No.
You got to do it. Buddy.
You're right. Well, listen, let's go out on this one. And it was so great having you on the show, and I hope to have you back soon. Do you have any tour dates or anything coming up in the future?
Yeah, I do. I am not sure. I'm going to have to turn down this Australia thing that they had set up. And for the next... for the next probably 3 months, I'm not going to do anything except just, we just finished doing the PBS thing I was telling you about.
Yep.
We did that
in Arkansas.
And then we're going to do a thing for the Oxford American, which is a cultural magazine, Southern magazine. But they have, they do four. Every quarter.
I love that magazine.
the new one is coming, the 10th year.
Yeah.
I didn't know if this song was even in existence. Boogie Chillin'.
Yeah.
I did a swing version with the 1 o'clock lab band.
When?
From North Texas State in Tyler in 1965.
And you don't even remember cutting that?
I don't even remember.
So that's coming out with the next magazine?
Yeah, that's their kickoff song.
Oh, you're kidding me!
Yeah, that, and they're going to run up the thing about me going down to help BB break ground down in Mississippi.
Oh, fantastic! All right, well, that's in the next issue of Oxford American.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, we hope to have you back on the show. We wish you all the best.
Thank you, man.
And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your great stories and your great music. And I just can't even tell you, I'm a huge fan of yours, and it was a thrill for me.
For me too, buddy.
Let's go out with Wildcat Tamer, the Rock and Roll Tornado. He'll be blowing to a town near you, hopefully your town, real soon. So if you can, get out there and see the legendary Dale Hawkins.
Caught fishes in the sea. Well,